Do you feel like your business is running your life instead of the other way around? I'm Roy Castleman. I've built multiple seven-figure companies, worked across continents, and coached high-performing entrepreneurs. But I've also been completely burnt out. At one point, I was barely seeing my daughter, drowning in stress, and one step away from walking away from it all. That's when I made a decision to build a business and a life that works for me. The journey became Elevate 360. A system to help business owners reclaim their time, find their energy again, and get back in control without sacrificing growth. And this podcast, Power Movers, is where I share real stories behind that shift. Each week, you'll hear from entrepreneurs, founders, and leaders who've walked through the fire and come out of the other side with clarity, courage, and a system that works. If you're ready to build a business that gives you more life instead of taking it away, you're in the right place. So here we are again, Power Movers. Today we have Kate Riggs who's joining us, and randomly I met Kate a couple of weeks ago in a forest, and then I put her in an ice bath, and I think that was an experience, and she just went in and she was super calm and it all kind of worked really well, and I was like, okay, all right. We got chatting. Kate is an entrepreneur, now she is. She's taken that step, and I love that. I love it when people take that step. So we're going to have a conversation with Kate. We're going to find out a bit about her life. She might share some of the stories that she's got and tell us a bit more about herself. And then we're going to investigate how she's going forward. Kate does something quite amazing, which I'll let her share with you. So let me first of all introduce Kate. Welcome, Kate. Thank you for joining me.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I was really hoping you would introduce me so I didn't have to do it.
Tell me just a little bit about... Okay, here's the first question. Let's make it easy.
Yeah.
You decided at some point a little while ago that you were going to be an entrepreneur. Tell me about that.
Oh, gosh. So my top line, if someone says to me, what do you do? I say, I'm an art therapist. That is the thing. That's the first name of my offering. I'm an art therapist. I have been unbelievably lucky. I have worked in such a broad range of places by design, not by accident. There's always some surprises, right? But I have worked with people in like corporate settings. I have worked with people running million-pound businesses, multi-million-pound businesses. I have worked in schools. I've worked with incarcerated people, addiction centers like rehab centers, drug and alcohol addiction. Yeah, little children to people really close to the end of their life. I've worked in a hospice. So I've really worked in some really interesting places, and I was an artist before any of that, and I am still, I do still consider myself an artist, although I'm not exhibiting my work much at the moment, although there is one that I am, which I will tell you about. And so the art always underpins everything that I do clinically. It also underpins just who I am as a being in this lifetime. And I have this very creative family, extended family, and like everything from like ceramicists to musicians, screen printers, even a fashion designer somewhere, just like very all different animator. My brother's an animator, very proud of him. Lots and lots of people doing lots and lots of different things, but all like creativity is the thing underneath everything else that we do. So yes, I'm an art therapist. But at this point, I've just sort of got to this point in my career. I've been doing it quite a long time now. And I just thought, you know what? I've got such a breadth of experience and breadth of knowledge and seeing these different communities up close. And there's something about, I would say I'm suited to the work. I think that's probably the right way to say it. I think I was this person first, like deeply interested in humans and behavior and why we do and think the things that we do and think. And so I was this person first, then I found the work. I found I was well suited to it quite quickly. And so I've been incredibly lucky in so much as people come in from all walks of life. And seriously, like people off the TV to people living in their cars, like and everyone in between. And they open up. Obviously not every single person I've worked with, or maybe everyone has their own way of opening up. But I remember like really early in the job thinking, I am honoured and honoured to be in this position. There's something about the credentials and the training and the kind of container of trust around the job, and I suppose that the me and who I show up as, that has people really just let go and like just tell me their stuff, or I sometimes get the feeling like they're talking to themselves, but whatever it is, the material comes up. And so I've witnessed this just unbelievable breadth of human experience over these years. And I'm like, yeah, giddy with gratitude. And I got to the point where I thought, you know what? I've got so much to share. I think I've already got more in here. I'm pointing to my head. I think I've already got more in here and in my body and everything, just experientially, than would even fit into, I don't know, a set of encyclopedias. So I first wanted to start trying to write stuff down just to get it out to make sure it was like there that other people could access it. And then I have a friend of mine who's encouraging me to come out more and encouraging me to share this stuff more. And so I'm working towards building an online program, like an online school, if you like, where I can share the like introduction to art therapy skills and then everything else in between that people might be interested in. And yeah, I was just telling Roy before we started this that I woke up one morning last week or the week before, and the art therapy textbook that I've been carrying around in my head for literally like more than a decade was suddenly ready to be birthed. So I sat down and started writing. I paused for meals. That was about it. And it was done in 3 days. It was done, and I'm really pleased with it. So yeah, the stuff is taking shape one bit at a time, but that is who I am, and that is what I do professionally, and that's yeah, also just who I am as a person.
Amazing, amazing.
I guess I didn't know what to say.
Now, let's go back. Let's go back to early Kate. Let's go back to right to the beginning. Just tell us a little bit about you.
Oh gosh.
Born where?
Born in South London, in Battersea. Started life there in a really, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. We moved to East London at a certain point, and I also very much love East London, but there's something about just that place, just South London. My earliest memories are kicking a pile of leaves on Clapham Common, and I know how tiny I must have been because the pile of leaves is like as high as my head. So yeah, really lovely early memories in that bit of South London. And my our first ever family, the family home I was born into, my dad already had a working workshop as part of our house. That was like the thing they were looking for when they bought the place, somewhere that he could work because he already had a design company from pretty young. I would say I inherited the kind of entrepreneur, definitely the creativity from my dad, and but also the entrepreneurial thing. He was like, he just always used to say, I'm a terrible employee. He was like, I'm don't ever, nothing wrong with it. It's fantastic for a lot of people, but it's just there was something about his personality and his whatever idiosyncrasies that just it didn't, he would always, it didn't go well. He knew early.
I consider myself, eminently unemployable.
Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't want to put up
Exactly.
with me.
But yeah, even by the time I was born, he already had a functioning design business. I think it must have been pretty early days because he went back to graduate school as in his 20s. Anyway, left school barely educated, but at a certain point decided that he would do this industrial engineering thing. And yeah, so there was creativity like in our family home right from the beginning.
So you went through growing up in London, going up to all those things, going through to school, all that, pretty happy, pretty friendly.
Yeah, it was all pretty good. It was all pretty good. Oh gosh, I don't know what to say.
Let it out.
Well, obviously I'm here to talk about what it is that I'm doing, but and it's a strange feeling because I'm known by a few different audiences. I would say there's people that know me as an art therapist, and that is what I do, and it's what I love, and I'm never going to retire. I'm going to keep doing it for as long as I can. But there's another audience that knows me a different way because my dad's design company, at a certain point, they were doing pretty well. They'd had a couple of designs that made them a bit of money, and so they were managing to pay their bills and whatever. And they had a point where, but across lots of different areas. And they had an offer of a really big, quite lucrative offer in medical supplies. I'll tell you what in a minute. And there was either that one, or they had also had a couple of toy designs that had also been sold and done quite well, or licensed and had done pretty well. So they're there, they're like, what do we do? These two different things, medical supplies or toys. And then in the end, they just looked at one another. My dad already had his business partner. They met each other in design school, Central St. Martin's. And they looked at one another and were like, we don't want to spend the next 40 years making adult diapers, adult sanitary wear, because that was the contract on offer. Toys would be more fun. Toys would be more fun. So they decided to go with the toys. And I was 4 years old when my dad handed me a makeup compact. I didn't know what that was. It was just it was a toy. It was something for me to play with. And he just handed me this thing, and I open up the makeup compact, and inside it is a whole little house, like stairs and an upstairs and a kind of bed and everything. And then downstairs is a little garden, and there's this tiny little wooden peg of a doll, absolutely the perfect size for my 4-year-old hands. And I took it off and played with it very happily for about 6 or 7 years. My dad then found it at the bottom of the toy box one day when I was like maybe starting to get ready to go to secondary school, or maybe I was already there. And he found this thing, and he's just, oh, this actually looks like Kate. It didn't leave her side for 6 or 7 years. There must be something good about it. Maybe I'll take it into my design company and show it to the other people and see what they think of it. And that
How's the
toy,
company doing now? At this point, how is the company doing?
it was going, yeah, it was okay. It was, yeah, it was functioning.
You got to see all those entrepreneurial pains as you went through that, I'm sure.
Exactly. It was just like the normal wallpaper of it was the background to our home, is what I'm trying to say. It was absolutely normal. I didn't know anything else. But yeah, that powder compact then went to, he got it in front of the right people, and it became a product, a toy known as Polly Pocket. So Dad invented it. That was his job. He was an inventor. He invented Polly Pocket, and the first one was made for me, and I got to have one all to myself for those 6 or 7 years. And mine wasn't called Polly, she was just my doll. That was what I called her. And then, but yeah, then they licensed the invention to Bluebird Toys in Swindon in the UK pretty early on. And that was and it proved pretty popular. And then, yeah, kept going in that form for quite some time. And then eventually it was bought by Mattel. You might have heard of them. They made another toy you might have heard of called Barbie. But for a long time, Dad always used to proudly say, for a long time, Polly was the only serious competitor to Barbie in the girls' toys industry at the time. So she was, oh, in second place. Obviously, no one beats Barbie. She was a pretty close second. Anyway, I could say a lot more about that. But that's the other audience. So other people know me as that. And I, again, was telling our friend Roy, I tend to be either kind of one persona or the other in different spaces. I'm not often both in the same place. So this is a little bit of an experiment for me. Let's just talk about all of it in one place and see what happens. So there we are.
How did that period of your life really shape you? Because we are the experience of, or we are the total of all of our experiences. And you got to see your dad go through this entrepreneurial journey. He was struggling, presumably then he became successful. That changed your life to some degree. Were there the positives and negatives that you took away from that? Because you take all of those experiences with you now, and as you go on this journey yourself, right, you get to just harness all those experiences. So bringing them to the front is, such a powerful tool.
Yeah, it's true. Thank you. I think there's something, when I look back at that period, there was definitely something about believing in yourself, because Dad certainly did, even when there were times when he felt himself to be a bit of a lone voice. It wasn't like, it took a while sometimes, he said, for other people to see what he saw, not just with Polly, with other things as well. So it was a pretty big lesson in believing in yourself. If you know, in that kind of body-based wisdom, that kind of way, that this thing is true, then it's just a matter of time. You just stay with it. And maybe another day you need different language, or you need to present things in a slightly different way, or maybe there's too many variables to calculate. So it's all we can do is trust what's in here. And I definitely, Dad modeled that for sure. Like he would be going into things sometimes and it felt like a gamble or a risk, or it was a gamble or a risk, but he would just have this, nope, that's it. That's the right thing. Off we go. Like, male, high functioning Leo, all of those things, just like, phew, we go. So he did. And we had that modeled early on. And then,
I mean, that's such an important thing, though, isn't it? This, as an entrepreneurial piece, right? As we do these journeys, self-belief is everything. It just is everything. Because I really feel and believe that We go into this journey and we start, most of us start with no idea about anything. And we believe, we go in because we believe we can solve a problem. And your dad must have done this as well. There's a problem that he's solving, right? And there's, so you go in and you think, I can solve this problem. I can make a young girl's life that much happier. And then initially we speak to people and we have our parents and we have our friends and they all say, it's a great idea, whatever you're doing. Probably for the first three conversations. Then, directly after that, they're sick of you.
Was it this again? Oh, yeah.
They don't want to hear about it. So quite quickly, it becomes a lonely journey.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you end up with, you've lost that normal support network that you had, okay? And then if you start getting any success at all, you're even having two or three staff members, suddenly you're different. Yeah, entrepreneurs are different. We have a different approach. We have a different commitment. We have a different vision. Yeah, and some people are born to be entrepreneurs, right? Some of us are, that's just, we're born to be entrepreneurs. Yeah, and that means we don't necessarily, we can communicate, we can even be friends with, but we don't feel the same way about this project. I think that's such a powerful thing to understand about entrepreneurs. It can be lonely, so you really do need to find your people.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I sometimes think it's a bit of a lonely experience being a creative person in a certain way. And I know it's all we can find each other on is just, yeah, sure. But this isn't there something about the kind of creative, or it seems to me with my creative mind, that there's something about it that can like naturally lean towards isolation. You know what I mean? Just not, I know it's funny, that sounds like a strange thing to say, because I definitely consider myself a deeply social person, profoundly. My friends are my sanity. I'd be lost without them. But there's something about I can only have that creative spark, like that first moment when I'm on my own. And that thing is so precious to me and not something I can force or push. Like it literally has to come when it comes. And I can only do that when I'm on my own. I wish it wasn't like that. I need people. As soon as I've had that spark, that click, that moment, then I absolutely need people. Like I have some very patient people around me in my friendship group, because they have to hear not every thought, but anything that I think is really has something good to it. I need to talk to about three or four different people, get three or four different viewpoints on it. And that, so in that they are invaluable. But, and that first initial ignition moment, I've only ever experienced that on my own. The good stuff that stayed, it's always been on my own. So it's a funny paradoxical kind of experience. Like I absolutely need one and I absolutely need the other. And when I need one, I can't push myself to be in the other. And
it's really, you really are making me think here, because I've had this dual relationship with creativity. I've never considered myself a creative person.
Seriously?
And just in the background, I drew a bee once when I was like 8 or something. And I was so proud of it.
Yeah,
and I wish I had the beer store, but but I can't look at a piece of paper and do what artists do. Yeah, and that's not creativity there. From an entrepreneurial point of view, I now consider myself very creative. Yeah, because I have to think through things in such a different way. It's just a different way. And I wonder if all entrepreneurs are creative in their own way. Yeah, and they just need to embrace that, because yeah, it's only literally been the last probably, initially I've got three IT companies. IT is not really so creative, no? Yeah, it's just not seeing it, not even being part of my radar. Until in the last 2 years, the last 3 years, people have been saying to me, yeah, but you are creative. And I'm like, okay, can I own that? Can I step into that role? And that's allowed me by stepping into it to be even more creative, and actually owning it.
Yeah, I love that. It's something, just as you were talking, I was just like, oh yeah, it's that. Some people call it like lateral thinking, as in you might think directionally different from maybe how other people would think. There's another better example, but it was something related to kind of plant science. And it was like plants will grow in whatever direction. They don't have a preference, right? They'll just grow where the nutrients are, where the water is, where the soil is at the right consistency. They need to be held and supported, but they also need to have room literally for the new roots and the new plants, the new bits to grow off them. So there's something tremendously organic about it, and it feels like that type of thinking, the type of thinking that like associative thinking that can jump from thing to thing, is not actually as typical as I first thought it was. I thought everybody thought like that, and everybody had that kind of associative, oh gosh, I'm thinking of an example, but there was something here.
You have these moments, right,
Yeah.
you say something and you're just like, huh? Why wasn't that obvious?
Yeah.
That's a story of my life.
Exactly. And that kind of sideways leap thing, which that was another thing with Dad, that was like his humor was very associative, if you can say it like that. There'd be something that would remind you of something else that reminds you of something else. And if you could get those things linked up quickly, we would just fall about laughing. It was I don't know, a firm grip of the absurd. That's what he always used to say, have a firm grip of the absurd. Go on.
Tell me a fun memory of your dad. Because
Oh gosh.
he passed, didn't he?
Yeah, last summer. There's so many. This is funny. This is a story that I wrote for the I was saying before, Dad asked me, just before he passed, Dad asked me to write the family memoir, which I've been working on for, gosh, yeah, a couple, year and a half, maybe a bit longer now at this stage. And it's coming together, and there are so many stories. So anyway, it's quite nice to write these things down. And there was one that I was writing the other day, and it was so Dad, for all his kind of creativity and being a musician and everything else, also had a deep love of science and physics in particular. And he had this kind of assumption that if my brother and I were there in the room and we didn't immediately glaze over, then he could explain these things to us, and he assumed that we would be able to understand. Or not assumed, but he didn't ever underestimate
Cool.
your understanding. So he didn't talk down to us ever at any age. He would always, you'll probably be able to wrap your head around this, and if not, I'll explain it differently, and off we go.
What a blessing.
Huh?
Blessing that is.
Yeah, it was very cool. It was very cool. But in this one particular example, this is a true story. It was a Saturday morning, and we're all sat in Mum and Dad's bed, as we often did, with like tea and biscuits and stuff, and it was lovely. And then we, for some reason, Dad had just read this thing about, and I'm not going to get the physics correct, but there was something about the new theory that had just people have been talking about, that was if we understood space-time as a sheet instead of a whatever they understood it as before, then that would give us a lot more understanding. So like in the way that a sheet will be bent by the gravity and mass of planets, then stuff, light bends and all that stuff. But he was determined, we were maybe like 5 and 7 at the time, but he was determined he was going to explain this to us. So he was starting verbally, and we think maybe we got some of that. He's like, hang on a sec, I'll make you a model. And then the next thing I know, we've got, I think there were definitely t and oranges, like tangerines, rolling around on the duvet, on the bed sheet. And then there was maybe something else, I can't remember. It was he's like picking up the bed sheet to show, look, it's like this. See the oranges? And they're doing my brother and I were just wetting ourselves laughing. We're like, I have no idea what's going on. Actually, you know what? That's not true. It did explain it. It did illustrate it really beautifully. And so it was ultimately a learning moment, but also it was just so funny. It was like this ridiculous man, even at 7 years old, I'm like, this is ridiculous. But then there's another part that I think, well, imagine if they taught things like that in schools. Imagine if in the physics class you had to get hold of one corner of a bed sheet and whirl a load of oranges around, and everything was so like embodied. Yeah, that was a fun story.
Cool. Okay, so now we're going to go a little bit more thoughtful, shall we? Almost always, when an entrepreneur goes out and steps out into the world and says, "I'm going to do this," there's a deeper reason for it. There's a deeper meaning. I love the stories of the step, step, and go. This is my ice bath thing, and I know you have a particular story, and I don't know if you want to share it or not. That you've been through a lot in the last year and a half. How do you get to? Now you're just on the cusp of creating something amazing, and you're going to share your own dream, you're going to share your own vision, you're going to help thousands of people. What was the thing that changed your mindset?
I think at a certain point, I knew without any doubt that I could help people with their mental health or whatever you want to call it, belief system, because I had helped myself. And there are a lot of books, whatever, things out there that say you can't therapize yourself. You can only do these things with other people. I don't know. I'm not here saying you can this or you can that. All I can say is, for my experience, I don't even know if I could tell you entirely what the catalyst was, but there was just a certain point late in my 20s or about to turn 30, it was like something snapped in my mind, is the best thing I can say. And it wasn't sudden, but it was still shocking in a certain way because I suddenly were just, my thinking would get me to a place where I felt scared. And I'd be looking around, it's like there's no external stimulus. There is no reason for me to be feeling scared right now, but I would feel like heart racing in my chest, panicking. I suppose you could call it a panic attack. I know I didn't have that language at the time. I don't know. But and I had a few of these experiences, and somewhere in there was just enough. I'd had just enough experience at that point of mental health and of these things that I knew that I wanted to do whatever I could first before I thought about medication or any of that stuff. I really didn't want to go down that route, and I certainly didn't want it to be my first step. So I pieced together everything that I knew about the world so far, and we in my personal life had quite some big changes around there. My kid's dad and I had broken up, and like life was suddenly looking quite different. And we make all these plans, and then life is what happens when we've made other plans. Life was fine, it was ticking along. But then, like I said, this like fear response started coming in, and like in some really odd places. Like I was out for a walk one day and I had this like kind of attack, and another time being sat in a theater. So like really inconvenient times. And I was like, okay, I need to do something about this. So I searched around and I thought, what do other people do? What have I heard that works? And I knew that a lot of people had said that running was really good for your mental health. And I knew that a lot of people said that dogs were really good for your mental health. So in the same year, in the same moment, I got a dog and I started running. And then I ran with the dog. And the dog was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. He was with us for 10 years, and it's another little being who's effectively lower down the food chain. He's like someone that needs taking care of. Some dogs aren't lower down the food chain, but this particular one was. He was blessed with looks, not with brains. He used to love to try to run into traffic every opportunity he got. Not the smartest, but very lovely and very adoring. So he would have me getting out every day, twice a day, in all weathers. He didn't care. He was quite happy. He would just put his little coat on, or I'd put his coat on, and we'd go. And then I started running, and I found that I liked it, and I ran more and more to the point where I was running marathons. And now, so I'm not here advocating people get a dog and run marathons, but I knew that through doing that and through the, and then I did find a therapist, and I did, but I managed to not go down the medication route. I'm not knocking it. It's a really personal choice. I'm just saying for me, it wasn't something I wanted to do at the time. So, yeah, and I found my first therapist. And really, in that sort of 2 or 3 years, I would say a kind of a more direct relationship with my mental health developed. I'd clearly always had one. We are always having a relationship with our internal experience. But I got a sort of bit of perspective being able to see it with more objectivity. And yeah, I really pulled myself back from a fucking dark place. I'm sorry if I'm not allowed to swear, but it was pretty dark. And it was scary. And those kind of two or three like really frightening attacks have never happened again, thank God. And if they did, I just know I'd have more skills and resource to deal with it now. So anyway, that fast forward, oh gosh, what was that, about 15 years ago, I started working in mental health, have never looked back, will always stay in it. I love the field deeply. Like I said, I love how my relationship I can have with my clients, whether it's one session or 20 or whatever it is, it's always something. There's something more than the sum of its parts that happens in therapy. I think it's really magic. And yeah, and that confidence thing again, I was just like, if I can help myself in that place, and now with all the experience and everything behind me, there was a certain point at which I realized, okay, I think I'm ready, or I'm as ready as I'm ever going to be. Like, I cannot be a lot more ready than this, so why wait another 10 years? And then when Dad died, he was 74, which is, it's not young, but it's not that old. And he was still like cycling huge distances and all kinds of things before the events that led up to the end of his life started happening. So I guess it was a little bit of, there's really no guarantees of how long we've got, so stop putting it off. This is me talking to myself. Stop putting it off. So there we are.
I shared with you a story from my early childhood, where my early childhood, I was 19, and I'll say this in a weird way, I was luckily run over by a drunken driver. And that point of, you see this often with people that have a loved one pass away, you realize that life is so short. You realize you don't have the time you think you have all the time. And for me, that was a realization sitting there, what have I not done What do I regret not doing? It wasn't what I regretted doing. It was what I regret not doing. And that pushed me to so many different things in my life. Yeah, it's, yeah, maybe your last gift your dad gave you is just get off your ass and get it done, girl. You got this. You got this.
Exactly.
So let me just, yeah, we're going to wrap up in a bit, but let me just go through the next stages. So you started building out. Tell me your dream for how this actually, give me some physical, how's it going to work? How's it going to happen?
Starting to build our online community. I've been really touched how people are responding already. I think the combination of like when I'm online, I'm talking about grief and I'm talking about mental health and noticing our thinking and having humor about that. There's something about it that people respond to and it's really lovely. And I've been lucky enough, in one of my previous jobs, I was hired back as a consultant to do some mediation work because there was a kind of legal dispute thing that was happening. So I have that kind of experience in there as well. So I can talk to these different audiences. And anyway, people are starting to sign up and it's really lovely. So slowly we're building our online community. I'm going to open the online school soon. And you said, what's the ideal? So I am lucky enough to have some dear friends in California. So I feel like part of my heart is over there. So the ideal is like being somewhere some of the year here in the UK, which I love, and some of the time in California, which I love, and being in either place, in either home, should we say, and being able to connect with the online community and share things and see them sharing with each other. And when I put out a little poll recently and asked the people who I'm already communicating with what they would like to build towards, surprisingly, a lot of people said they wanted to do an in-person retreat. And that really surprised me. I thought people wanted everything online these days. So maybe, and this is a new plan, people can tell me what they think, but I think the majority of everything we do will be through the online school because it's so versatile. It means people can access it wherever they are at any time. But then maybe we do start to build in one or two in-person retreats a year. Like, why not? I'm in another side story. I'm applying for my Italian citizenship because Dad was Italian and I can do that. So I'm lucky. And once that's done, it's just like, maybe we have a retreat in Italy. Why not? A beautiful part of the world. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
It does. It also gives me this thought. When we go out on our own like this, yeah, maybe the most inspiring thing is that the opportunities are all yours. You own every opportunity that's out there. And sometimes, you know, I call it shiny shit. Sometimes I chase way too much shiny shit. There's so many big opportunities. So getting them dialed down to what's actually going to help people is sometimes a challenge. But we have just such a huge kind of opportunistic, use your words right, opportunistic future, right? Yeah, you look forward. And when you were working full time, you looked forward to that. And now you look forward to this whole different view of total, yeah, it's your view. It doesn't need to be get up and go to work and do the same things. And yeah, you just have this massive future in front of you.
I know, we're really lucky.
How does that feel?
Yeah, really lucky, really lucky. And what's lovely is since I have committed to this thing, and I've closed all the back doors, there's no escape route, like this is it now, this is me now. Since I've committed to it, it is incredible the people that come to meet you on the path. And that's another thing, as I'm saying it, everyone told me that would happen. And it's not that I didn't believe them, but now I'm here and I'm seeing it happen. You're a good example. I'm just like, where did this dude come from? it's I feel like I've said magic too many times, but like, whatever it is, it's like when I say it's magic, it's like, if we tried to understand it with our little chimpanzee brains, we wouldn't be able to. All I can say is it really works. It's like the universe, you want to put it in more kind of woo terms, like the universe hears your commitment and it believes you. And it's like, okay, all right, they're stepping up. Okay, let's give them some of the stuff. They've been, because we weren't sure before. It's like the universe has to be sure that you meant it. Did she really mean it? Did he really mean it?
Yeah.
Yes, it seems they did. Okay, then let's give them the first little cookie. Okay, yeah, that went well. All right, next time we'll give them the bigger cookie. And yeah.
You can't have a plan B. I don't have a plan B. This is it. You can't have a plan B.
Okay. Oh, that feels so scary to say, but it's true. I don't want a plan B. At this stage, this is all I want. This is all I care about. Like I said, I don't want to retire. I want to be doing this for as long as... I'll be doing webinars from my old lady bed. I don't care, like... What else is there apart from sharing a
Let's
pension?
face it, we're not going to be old ladies and old men, because in the next 5 years we're going to take a tablet and go back to 21 again. So, yeah.
I don't want to do that. I like being, I like 47. I think it's fun.
Yeah, I don't want to be 21 again for sure. 100%.
Yeah.
100%. So, we're going to wrap up now, and
Okay.
I want you to think of what's one thing you could do to encourage other people sitting on the fence going forward on this. May I do entrepreneurship, won't I? What's one thing you could do to encourage them?
I think I'm just going to go back to that last example. It's inside yourself what those things are that you don't dare hope are possible. And they could be really small things. It doesn't have to be like the big goal, but like those little things. You know what those little things are that you don't dare dream or hope are possible. I am telling you, they are. And they only are when you commit to the big scary thing or the big new thing or whatever it is. I'm sorry, there's no shortcut. I have looked. I spent the last 10 years looking for a shortcut. It turns out there really isn't one. You just have to close all your back doors, say, this is it. Tie up your little knapsack and just go. There's no way, there's no workaround, friends. I've tried it. Trust me.
So thank you so much for joining us here, and yeah, sharing and being amazing. I will put all your contact details below on this podcast when we release it. And yeah, I want to speak to you in 3 months' time, and you're going to tell us how amazingly you're doing in this new area role.
All right, yeah, deal. Thank you so much. It was really fun, Roy.
For listening to Power Movers, the podcast from All the Power, where our mission is to help business owners reclaim their time, reset their energy, and live the life they love. If this episode sparked something for you, your next step is simple. Take the fit check at allthepower.co.uk. It's a short clarity tool that helps you see where you are, what's getting in the way, and what might be possible if you have the right system. When you're ready, come and join the tribe. Power Movers start with our signature framework called Elevate 360, a system built to help you escape survival mode, create structure, and move forward with power. Just remember, everything we share here is based on real stories, experience, and frameworks. It's not personal business advice. Always speak to a coach or advisor before making big decisions. Because in the end, it's about more than business. It's about building a life that you actually love. I'm Roy Castleman, and I'll see you in the next episode.